are back. I apologize. We had technical difficulties right as we went on air. I could not hear myself. I could not hear music. I couldn't even hear our guests. And so I do apologize. We've been troubleshooting for about the last 18 minutes or so, and I have to give a huge shout-out to Block Talk Radio because as soon as I experienced the difficulties, got run over to support, they were on it like white on rice. So thank you so much. And Kathy was the support person that helped us out. So thank you so much, Kathy. We appreciate it. And so I apologize, but if you've hung with us for a few, we greatly appreciate it because I know that many of you are very excited for our guests this evening, who we have. And as a matter of fact, if you'll allow me to take just one more moment, I need to get her on the line because I didn't want to hold her, leave her in a holding pattern, not knowing what was going to happen. So I'll get her on the line. And while we're waiting, I'm going to go ahead and play a tune just to bide your time. And let's see, let's pick one here. I want to play a song by Peach, who was on our show a couple weeks ago. She's a delightful lady. She's a blues rocker. Love her music. And this is a song that she's been promoting for a little while now. This is Come Up and See Me Sometime. Enjoyed that. All right, folks. Thank you so much for bearing with us while we had those technical difficulties. We're all straight now, so we have our guest on the line. You have been waiting to speak with her for a while, and we are so excited to have her with us tonight. And just to, in case you've had your head in the sand for about the last 2 decades, I'm just going to give you a brief overview, because since we knew her on this incredibly famous television program that we've all come to love, she's done so much since then, and it is well deserved to speak about it. She is most recognized, as we all know, for her iconic character of Nellie Olson on the decade-long hit series Little House on the Prairie. In fact, Vanity Fair chose the character as the number one bitch in all TV history, second to Joan Collins, her ruthless character of Alexis Colby. Imagine that. In addition to her 7 years on Little House, she has starred in such cult classics as The Love Boat, Fantasy Island, and the NBC Movie of the Week, I Married Wyatt Earp, starring Marie Osmond. She continues to amuse audiences through her many film, television, and stage appearances. She is a stand-up comedian and has headlined at nightclubs such as The Laugh Factory, The Comedy Store, and The Improv in Los Angeles, as well as The Cutting Room in New York. In 2010, she released her memoirs titled Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived Nellie Olson and Learned to Love Being Hated, which became a one-woman show that began at Club Fez in New York and has now become a worldwide phenomenon. We are so very proud to welcome Allison Arngrim. Hello, Allison.
Hello. How are you?
I am wonderful, and thank you so much for your patience and bearing with us while we got through all of those difficulties earlier. Thank you for being here with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, I just want to first congratulate you on the huge success of your book, as well as your show, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. I mean, wow, it has been so well received.
It's just crazy. It's just crazy. I mean, I started it really as an answer to my fans, because they all kept asking me the same questions and the same questions all the time. It was, like, hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, thought, well, I should talk about it. I should just do it where I say, okay, what is it you want to know? Yes, fine. So I talk about what it's like to have people hate me, what it's like to be an ex-child star. And I do a Q&A section with the audience and everything. It's really fun.
Well, in your book, you outline some of your most cherished behind-the-scenes stories from the Little House set. And mm-hmm. if you could only choose one of those stories, what would it be?
If I could only which one of those stories?
If you could only pick one as being, like, your all-time favorite.
There's so many, because it was the people I was working with that were so much fun. I mean, I have my favorite episode is when I go down the hill in the wheelchair. One of my favorite stories, though, is indeed a really popular episode is the Campo one, where Laura and Nellie are in the river at one point. This was absolutely crazy, because Melissa Gilbert and I had to wear actual wetsuits, neoprene wetsuits, under our clothes, because we were in a real river,
mm-hmm.
and it was freezing cold, and there was a current, and you could, like, get swept away, and, you know, your chest would seize up. So we're wearing full diving suits and petticoats and dresses. And at one point we said, well, we need to go to the bathroom. And they said, well, the bathrooms are all the way up the hill. We'd have to put you in the car, drive you up the hill, get you out of the clothes, out of the wetsuits, have you go to the bathroom, put the wetsuits back on, then put all the clothes back on, then drive you back down the hill. This is going to take, like, you know, an hour here. We don't have time. Lunch is in 2 hours. Can you hold it? And
oh, my gosh.
Beautiful child actors. We said, sure, sure, no problem. So we're standing there in the freezing cold water, and I turn around, and Melissa gets this smile on her face. And I said, oh, no, tell me you did not. And she turns to me and goes, do it. It'll keep you warm. Peeing away in her wetsuits. Now, I've had divers tell me that's what you do when you're out in the ocean. But, oh, my God, yeah, the wardrobe women had a fit. We never denied bathroom privileges again, I can say that.
Well, you know, that's hilarious. That taught them a lesson. Who asked a child? I mean, can you, you know, I know from my own experience,
yeah,
my own story. You know,
14, 13 years old, little girl.
Yeah, the pee-pee dance, you just don't tell them, you know, hey,
right?
You're going to have to wait 2 hours. What?
Oh, yeah, and we're standing in the river, rushing, rushing, trickling water.
That really helped things, you know. So, one thing, you know, something about your book, as you said, you know, you've answered a lot of fan questions through the, and you're very candid in your book about all aspects of your life. And what are some takeaways that you hope readers have gotten from the book, aside from having lots of questions answered?
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah, I mean, yes, there's lots about the show, but there's lots about my life in general and things that have gone on. I hope that people, when they read the book, then they see that, you know, the things I talk about, being abused as a child and difficulties in being a child actor and all these are things that happen to an awful lot of other people. I hope people in reading it get some insight into what it's like to grow up in that kind of environment. I hope if anyone reads it who has lived through that, that they take some hope that a person can have a happy life, even if they got off to a terrible start. I think a lot of people who had very difficult childhoods and felt that Little House on the Prairie was really something they could lean on and something that made them feel better and a real emotional catharsis for them, will feel validated and gratified in knowing that it was for me and many people on the show as well, that they weren't alone in that and they weren't wrong, they were right. And if watching Little House on the Prairie helps you feel better about your, by all means, get the DVDs, tune in, that does work. But there are things that you can look at in your life and cling to and go, okay, this is the direction I want to go, that you can choose how your life turns out, even if everything is telling you, well, your life is going to be exactly like this.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is so true and well said indeed. And for you being a child actor, I mean, especially playing the role of Nellie Olson, how challenging was that for you, or was it challenging?
Well, on the one hand, yes, I mean, I was not like Nellie Olson. I'm not really that horrible. So it was challenging. I mean, I was someone so awful. On the other hand, there's something so freeing about playing a character that just yells and screams and lets it all out and does all these awful things. There were days when I thought, you know, this is too much fun. Maybe this is a little too easy. Is there something wrong with me?
Well, now, what's very interesting is now you tell me if this is correct or not, but I had read somewhere that you had appeared in public in costume once, and, like, you were literally attacked by a group of elementary school girls because there's Nellie Olson. I mean, it's,
worst mistake ever. And my father warned them, because some publicist dream thought this would be an awesome idea. It was a charity that we'll have. The girl who plays Nellie and the woman who plays Mrs. Olson, McGregor, will have them go in costume. It'll be great. What on earth are they? And my father said, you know, this is a terrible idea. This is like the worst idea ever. It's not going to go. You're going to be in costume. It's too much. And sure enough, no one would talk to us. Nobody wanted an autograph. At one point, Catherine was talking to a little girl. She was only 4 years old. She looked at her and poor child started crying. She's frightened out of her wits seeing Mrs. Olson. And then I said, well, I'm just going to go get a hot dog. Man, forget it. And I went to get something to eat. Two girls ran up, kicked me right in the butt, knocked me face down on the cement, petticoats and all. My father said, okay, that's enough of that. Got me, took me home. And he said, see, I told you it was a bad idea. But I kept thinking, well, on the one hand, yeah, this is a terrible idea. I'm never going out in costume again. And the other, I thought, what am I doing on screen that is making people this crazy? I clearly am on the right track. I have hit a nerve.
That's true. You knew that you were acting to the hilt when people love to hate Nellie Olson. And I must tell you, you know, growing up watching the show myself, you know, even though you know it's fiction and it's, you know, everyone's acting, especially, but at that age, you're watching you on screen. I was watching you and I was so intimidated by you. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this girl is for real, you know. So, I mean, that was just the brilliance of your acting, that you made it so believable because
I've had this reaction from grown people. I had a grown woman show up at my autograph show, and she walked up to the table. She didn't say hello, didn't get an autograph, just stared at me and said, I forgive you, and walked out. And that was a grown person. So, yeah,
well,
people who you would think, they know it's acting, but it just makes people so mad.
Well, you know, that's just, you know, that's what they say a lot of time about daytime drama stars, is that, you know,
right.
fans of daytime can't separate the character from the actor and the actresses. And it, but I think a lot of it has to do with how believable it comes across. And
mm-hmm.
you're, the way you portrayed that character and the way you carried it was, I mean, very believable. And so, yeah, I could see there would be people out there, even grown-ups, that would, you know, it would be hard to kind of separate you and those poor girls at that school. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and
well,
they were young girls.
Actually,
oh, yeah, and you know, I just started the show, so they were pretty young girls. And then also, I hadn't done, like, a bunch of interviews or anything. So it's not like they'd
mm-hmm.
seen me on some talk show and could say, oh, yeah, she's acting. They just
yeah.
saw me and were like, well, there she is. There she is. Oh, my God, let's kick her.
Well, you know, wouldn't that have just floored them if you had been, like, super nice and said, hey, how are you guys doing? And they would have looked
right.
at me like, where is Nellie Olson and what have you done with her kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, you're,
it
not,
would have been,
you're not really her. You're faking.
That's right. You're faking. Where's she at? You know, then they would have warmed up to you maybe. But anyway, well, you know, one of the things that I think has come out of your book that you talk about is that, you know, you are an incest and sexual abuse survivor, and the role of Nellie Olson, playing that role, really helped you to find your voice through your character. And talk a little bit about how, you know, playing that role was so crucial to that for you.
It's true. When I was doing the show, because I had been, it was before the show, and I had been keeping this secret and just not telling people. Anyone who's been through this knows it's the worst part is the keeping of the secrets. And
mm-hmm.
just the weighing on me, not telling anyone this, not being able to ask for help, just, you know, saying I can never tell anyone this, and the threats of if you ever tell anyone. It's a horrible feeling. And here I was suddenly on this show where I was playing someone who could yell and scream and, as I said, let it all hang out, release all that anger and all that rage. And I was also on this show with these really very, very nice people who were very kind and supportive, a really good environment that I really hadn't experienced anything like that. And it was a real change. I was someone who was, you know, I was picked on at school. I was obviously bullied at home. And here I was playing someone that other people were afraid of. I had been afraid of everything and everybody, and suddenly I'd even go to the Easter Fair and people were afraid of me. And I thought, wait, people are scared of me? Wait, that never happened before. So that was a really interesting feeling, and it just kind of shifts things. I mean, that's the problem with abuse, with domestic violence, sexual abuse, physical abuse. You're living in your own little world, your own little cave. You don't realize what's going on out there of any other perspective. So anything that gets you out of that, that allows you to see that there's a different world, a different way of being, that maybe you're not that. That's not your identity, the victim, the bully fodder. You could be something else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, you know, playing the character of Nellie, it had to have been incredibly empowering for you, you know, just to be able to, like you say, get it out of your system in that way. And perhaps that is one of the reasons why, if not the reason why, that character was so believable and came across on screen. And when you did go out in public dressed in character, people really saw you as Nellie Olson, the, you know, the bully of, you know, Little House on the Prairie and the world kind of thing. And so, you know, but I would imagine it had to have been somewhat therapeutic for you to be able to have that release.
Oh, I think it was absolutely therapeutic because, you know, that's the thing. The thing that causes depression is, as they say, anger turned inward. And here I was certainly turning my anger outward. To have that release, I talk to people all the time, and they say that's the worst part, is where do you go with all that anger, all that rage? And here I was venting it every week. It's really very freeing.
Mm-hmm. Extremely so. And now, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, we lost Michael Landon in 91 with,
mm-hmm.
you know, to cancer, with this long, hard battle. And what are some of your fondest memories of working with him on set?
Well, one of the things that I liked about it, Michael was one of the funniest people I ever met. He really was. He was absolutely hilarious. He enjoyed practical jokes. As I always said, the only thing you need to know about Michael Landon is that his birthday was Halloween. Born on Halloween, his first big movie role, I Was a Teenage Werewolf. I mean, this guy, he liked dressing up and jokes and carrying on, and he had this high-pitched giggle like a girl. You knew he'd arrived on the set, you'd stand there, you'd suddenly hear, and you go, what is this, that? Oh, it's Michael. And he was so much fun because, you know, we see him as his Pa Ingalls, the perfect father. And in real life, he was very Hollywood. You know, he was married and divorced. He was married three times, divorced twice. He drove a Ferrari. He smoked. He drank. Went to the racetrack for the rap party. Things that you wouldn't associate with Pa Ingalls. But at the same time, he believed in hard work. And, you know, the kids making sure we stayed in school and did our work and did our school work. And he had those kind of values at the same time. And I think Little House on the Prairie represented the kind of family life he wished he'd had, because his childhood was not exactly the prairie. He did not have a good time as a kid, and he really wanted to have the perfect life. He didn't really achieve it in his own life. He had so many problems with his marriages. And this is what he'd hoped it could be. And in a way, all the people who were watching the show and sort of going through therapy by watching Little House, we were all going through it with Michael. The show was his therapy, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and everyone loved him. I mean, you know, and I think television in that era of time, you know, you didn't have the world of paparazzi where, you know, a lot of things like what was going on with you personally and what you had been dealing with and,
right.
And you know, all the, you know, and what you just described, Michael, as being, I mean, in that day and time, we didn't have paparazzi, so we didn't know all this. So how we saw him on screen was how we thought things were in real life for him as
right.
well, you know, because
we had
you just didn't have
you know,
the...
I was telling someone the other day, I said, in the old days, it was the National Enquirer, and it took them a whole week to put out the paper. They used to say we put the paper to bed on Thursday, put it to bed. So if you mm-hmm. went out on Saturday night and got drunk and fell down the middle of the street in front of the nightclub, like people do now on TMZ, the Enquirer might get pictures,
mm-hmm.
but you had all day, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, for your lawyer and your publicist and your agent to call up the Enquirer and go, come on, man, don't run the pictures. What can we do for you that you did? And talk them out of running
mm-hmm.
that photo. Because they had to take someone back to the lab, they had to develop it, they had to lay out the photo. And if you could get your publicist to talk to the Enquirer for the 3 days before the Thursday deadline and talk about, you had three business days and Sunday to talk the Enquirer out of running that photo, you could do it. Now,
mm-hmm.
you got people with cell phones, you got TMZ, they're right there, you have Radar Online. It's instantaneous. You fall down in front of the club, you're on.
There's no
talking them out of it now.
I mean, there's a lot of citizen journalism now, you know, it's just people tweeting stuff to all these tabloids, and, you know, it's instantaneous. I mean, there's not enough finagling you can do, publicists can do nowadays for that sort of thing, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, the revolution will be televised, but it'll be on a cell phone.
Yeah, exactly. Showing up on social media in just a few moments. Hold on, you know, kind of thing. Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, I wanted to ask you about is that in your case, I mean, you know, so many actors are known for one character, that are known for one character in particular, rather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they tend to have difficulty kind of gravitating away from that as their careers unfold. And in your case,
right.
you know, as you evolved from Little House into other roles, I mean, were you ever able to fully shed that character, or was that something you didn't mind hanging on to because obviously you've gone on to use that character as a great platform for different things that you've done?
Exactly. I mean, indeed I was typecast. I mean, in the last few years I've been lucky. I've been allowed to, you know, play other characters, and I think doing the stand-up comedy and everything I've done has helped with that. But there was definitely typecasting going on. But, yeah, in the long run, that kind of character, you know, the bitchy ones, the villains, these are the ones that are really more popular now. And because that character was, well, people say iconic, it hit such a nerve. When I go to speak on issues, when I talk about AIDS, when I talk about child abuse, people do pay attention. Oh, it's Nellie Olson. What on earth is she going to say?
Yeah, and I have to share this. You'll get a kick out of this. But all I'm thinking, you know, this was like a joke. When we were having technical difficulties in the beginning, I'm thinking to myself, my gosh, I hope she doesn't go all Nellie Olson on me. That's pretty terrible. I'm totally joking with you, you know. I know, isn't that so true? Well, you know, I do want to talk to you about your charity work because you are such an advocate for some very important issues, one being, you know, how you got started, which was, as I had read, that, you know, when you lost your, you know, your friend and your little house husband, Steve Tracy, who passed away in 86 due to complications from HIV and AIDS. I mean, that kind of sprung you into the charity and advocate work, you know, limelight. And what kind of impact did his death have on you that just kind of propelled you forward in that way?
Well, when Steve got sick, he went very public with his diagnosis when a lot of people weren't. I mean, Steve Tracy died in 86 when a lot of people, you know, Sid Liberace was still on the watermelon diet. Nobody was talking about AIDS yet, not the way they do now. That was when they first were still, you could lie on a death certificate. People had no idea who was dying of AIDS and who wasn't. And Rock Hudson had only come forward on his deathbed, you know, people were not coming out. You had no Magic Johnson. You had no famous person saying, I have AIDS. You also really had no treatment to speak of either. It was a terrible time. And here was Steve, who was doing interviews and talked about the fact that he had AIDS. But it was shocking because at the time people were so crazy. I had people who thought that perhaps I had it because we'd kissed on TV. I mean, that's how pathetic it was back then. And I thought, well, if this is how confused and terrified and ignorant everyone is, if people realize their level of knowledge is this low, I should do something. And they were all calling me. And I thought, well, if they're all going to call me, the press outlets are going to call me, people are going to ask me questions they really should be asking their doctor, and how did he get it, and can you get it, what is this? Maybe I should go get the answers. And so that's when I went and did the hotline training and the training at AIDS Project Los Angeles, so that I thought, well, since I'm going to get asked anyway, I have this opportunity to go on TV, go on the radio, and I can answer their questions. I can get information out about HIV and AIDS that people clearly weren't getting. And so I used that opportunity to help people as best I could, and also obviously help Steve by extension. And then after he died, I continued because I saw the problem was still there. And also he was quite lucky. I mean, he'd made some money from the show. His mom and his sister stood by him. He had access to doctors and to medicine and health care. He wasn't out in the street. He hadn't been rejected by his family. There were people who had nothing, who were as sick as he was, and their mothers weren't talking to him. They weren't getting out on the next plane to come take care of them. So they all needed my help, too. And now it's sort of the same thing when I see what's going on with the sexual abuse of children, which, frankly, is just escalating, if anything. It's just unbelievable what goes on out there. People don't realize how bad things have gotten. And no one wants to talk about something that gruesome. But sometimes if you have a celebrity, people are willing to sit still long enough to get at least the basic info so they can do something. They can call their assembly person, their senator, their congressman, and try to get things passed that will at least help victims. You know, it's we just had the sentencing today of that lunatic maniac gastro in Ohio, and it's just astounding. As awful as it was to have that man carrying on and making excuses for himself all over the TV, it was great because that showed everyone what people like that are like. Because everyone said, wait a minute, he pled guilty, admitted, and rape and murder and this and that. And now he's standing here making this bizarre speech and carrying on like, no, really, I'm a nice guy. Really, I am. Excuse me. This is the mentality of these people who sexually abuse women and children. And remember, his victims were 17, 13, and the one who was in her 20s is like about 4'8". He thought she was a kid when he kidnapped her. So that's what this is how these people think. And that's something a lot of people don't realize, how these people will justify this stuff to themselves and say, oh, no, I didn't do it. And I hope that woke up a lot of people about just how rotten these people are. And so sometimes the horrible information needs to get out so people know how bad it is.
Yeah, and it is bad. I mean, when you think about, we live in the greatest nation on earth, and we have this happening right up under our noses. I mean, any given day you can turn on the news and you can hear about a teacher or your neighbor down the street, you know, just someone you would not imagine, this is going on left and right.
And
you know, just
you
like last
the
week, the prostitution
for,
ring.
You hear about the arrest for prostitution trafficking of kids, and they're not, it's not all overseas. They didn't arrest a bunch of people in some other country. They're arresting a bunch of Americans for trafficking children, American children, right here.
Yes.
Yes. It's unbelievable.
And it's appalling. I mean, it's just, it's unfathomable to think, you know, as you said in Castro's case, he was just trying to justify his actions because he didn't think he was doing anything wrong. Where
None
in their minds, in the wiring of their minds, did they ever think that it's okay to sexually molest or abuse a child? You know, for whatever reason. I mean, you think about Sandusky and all those boys he abused.
Right,
I mean, what the heck?
This guy said, I'm not a violent person. I simply kept them there without their being able to leave. That's a direct quote. I simply kept them there without their being able to leave. And no part of his brain saw that this sentence didn't make any sense.
Yeah. In his mind, it did, but his was the only one that made sense. You know what I'm saying?
That kind of justification. So when someone hears a Sandusky going, oh, it wasn't so bad, I didn't do it, you're right. He's no different. It's the same mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And it is sad. It is. But I was very happy to see that, you know, what came out about Castro today. And, you know, and I was glad to see that the prostitution ring was broken up last week and all those people were arrested. But, you know, the sad part of that is that there are still so many kids out there that are enduring that and going through that that have yet to be, you know, rescued from it. And their perpetrators are out there still doing it.
Completely. And that's why I am pleased that the stuff I'm able to do with protect.org on the web, what they're doing is they're seeing to it that programs that the FBI have, like Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, the people who track the child porn, which is how a lot of children are trafficked. They put up the video and say, you know, buy this kid. And they find these kind of people. They need the technology. That's it. Everything's social media. If they need the technology to be able to track these people who are trafficking people and selling the child porn, they need to find, well, we're seeing to it, Protect is helping the FBI and their programs like ICAC get funded, keep their funding, be able to get access to the latest technology. We're starting training programs for people who then will be working for ICAC. We're doing all of these kind of things to increase the ability of law enforcement, get them the facilities, the things that they need to catch and prosecute these people. We're looking at laws about sunlight and accountability, like you mentioned, prosecution. Are these people being prosecuted? We know we see all these people. Every day we see there's arrests on the TV, and then you kind of wonder, are these people getting out? Is anyone prosecuting these people, or are they letting them go? We want to know that at Protect, and we're seeing to it that laws are being passed, that information has to be out there, that you'll be able to look up your prosecutor and see how many cases he dropped or didn't.
And you know, it's interesting because I sat on a jury a while back. It's been within the last 6 months where it was a 32-year-old man who was chatting with an undercover police officer in the chat room for months. He thought he was chatting with a 13-year-old girl. And, of course, you know, I was jury foreman. We found him guilty. But at the end of the day, he had never had a criminal record. So the judge sent him on his way. He was on probation. I think the most leveling thing he had to do was register as a sex offender. And I'm thinking to myself, what is going to stop him from doing this again? You know, or how many more supposed 13-year-old girls had he talked to in a chat room, you know, before he happened upon what he did not know was an officer. I mean, it's just horrifying to think if, you know, if they're out there, are they going to do it again? If they've done it once and they get slapped on the wrist, how
Someone who doesn't have a record, maybe someone didn't get caught. Castro today proudly brought up the fact that he didn't really have a record. He hadn't been in jail before, and he said, and he only had a record, as he said, he had never been a wife beater until he got married.
Oh, my gosh.
I wasn't a wife beater. I met my wife. Yeah, that's how it works.
You know, he's in jail now, so he has a record now for sure.
Now he has a record. But he was kind of going with no prior offenses. I shouldn't get 1,000 years for this because I didn't do anything before.
Well, he still doesn't get it because he never has thought he was doing anything wrong to start with. And he won't until the day he dies, but he is in prison for the rest of his life where he needs to be. And that's good. That's one less perpetrator off of the street that could go do this to someone else, you know, and that's what it's going to take. It, you know, So, well, I really appreciate all the work that you're doing for these organizations because, you know, we need people like you out there. And it's a team effort. I mean, every one of us should be, like you say, contacting our congressman and really getting involved because that's what it's going to take. And just being aware of our surroundings, you know, in our communities. And if something doesn't look right or if you're around a child and that it doesn't seem right, if something doesn't fit, I think it's our responsibility to really go the extra mile.
Absolutely. Call it in. You know, the girl in Florida who was held for, I think it was 11 years and had two children by her captor, the way he was finally caught, he was on probation. The police were supposed to be visiting his house. He was out with his two daughters that he'd had by the girl he'd kidnapped, and he was on a college campus putting out flyers. And a campus security officer stopped him to find out what was going on. And just somewhere during the conversation with him and the daughters, the campus officer, she said something was terribly wrong with the whole story. Didn't know quite what was going on, but went, there's something isn't right. This guy and these two kids, I don't know what's going on, but there's something terribly the matter with this entire situation and what this guy is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And she called the police.
Yeah,
and the whole thing fell apart.
Well, and that's really what it takes is us just being, you know, aware and on our A game and just really questioning the stories of people because as we continue to go forward, we see more and more of this is presenting itself in our society and it's all around us, you know.
How many people they're finding in basements, this keeping people in the basement in the attic. There's somebody in Houston with a bunch of people in their basement. I'm just like, you know, I think I'm unshockable at this point. But my husband said, is this keeping people in basements for 10 and 20 years? Is this new or has this been going on? This is insane.
Yeah. Well, and again, even though social media can be a curse, it can also be a blessing because now the way the media has of breaking stories and getting information out there to the public so that they can be on the lookout for this sort of thing, the awareness level has been raised at least. And of course, everything like that has to help in these situations and hopefully gives hope to those children who are being victimized.
Well, it's the same technology that child predators use to lure children, the same technology they use to make and distribute child pornography, images of children being assaulted, the same technology they're, you know, these traffic people, it's the same technology that the police and the FBI and Interpol can use to catch them. So it's both ways.
There you go. Well, Allison, I can't thank you enough for being with us this evening and spending some of your time and giving us extra time on top of that, you know, and really appreciate speaking with you about everything in your career. You're just a phenomenal person.
Thank you very much.
You're definitely one of the nicest people, undoubtedly, I've ever spoken with, honestly. You're nothing like Millie Olson. Hello, everyone. She played a character on TV. You know, sometimes I just really want to scream on social media to people who are, like, all mad at their favorite soap stars. Like, please, just playing someone, you know.
Have friends on soaps. They just go wild for them. They throw things at them in the supermarket. They go crazy.
Well, you are so very nice and so very kind, and thank you so much for hanging out with us just, you know, to give us the time to get our technical difficulties fixed and then just chatting with us about your amazing career and all the great work you're doing for children everywhere. So thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And we wish you the best for much continued success, as always, and would love to have you back anytime, especially if you want to come on and talk about, you know, the platforms and the things that you feel very passionately about. We'd love to just do a show on nothing but that at some point. So we hope to be speaking with you again in the very near future. All right.
That worked.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought I lost you there.
No, hang on. Wait a minute. Oh, that worked. That sounded great.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much. And you have a great evening. Enjoy your weekend. And I'm sure we'll be in touch with you again soon. All right.
Take care,
Allison.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. Good night. We've been speaking with the delightful Allison Arngrim, and who played Nellie Olson on the iconic television series Little House on the Prairie. She's just absolutely wonderful, and we certainly enjoy chatting with her. She is just a delight. Truly one of the nicest people I've ever spoken with on this show. Certainly nothing like her character, as you can tell, and I hope that you enjoyed that as much as we did. And again, you know, I apologize. We got started late with the technical difficulties we were having. It was just kind of a fluke thing. And do hate that that happened, but so glad that you hung out with us so that you could hear the interview in its entirety. So with that, we just want to say a huge thanks, and a huge thanks to her again for being our special guest this evening. And so that is going to wrap our show, folks, for this evening, and we are off for the next few nights, but we will be back here on Monday evening. We will have Mr. Patrick Fawcett, who is currently playing Tony on the Tyler Perry brand-new series, The Have and the Have-Nots, on the OWN Network, and it's just been picked up for 16 more episodes. So hope that you will join us for that at 7 p.m. Eastern, Monday evening. And so with that, I will say good night. Have a great weekend, all. And we will see you again real soon. Take care, all. Good night.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, the one listening to this. Go to Stitcher.com and download the free app. It's a free app that lets you listen to our show 24/7, 365, anytime you'd like. You don't ever have to miss another episode again. And you can listen to thousands more shows and stations just like ours. So go now. Download it to your mobile devices, your Androids, your iPhones, your iPads, whatever you got. It's Stitcher.com, and it's free. Thanks for listening to tonight's show. You can connect to Behind the Mic Radio on Twitter at BT Mic Radio and on Facebook at Behind the Mic Radio. Check out our website at BehindTheMicRadio.com. Also, follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio, where you can stay up to date on all upcoming shows. Every episode is available for immediate download upon the conclusion of each broadcast, and as always, on iTunes. Thank you for joining us.